Mute everybody. I'm sure people will join. Let's go. Okay, so this is the Yechezkel Shir. Le'ilui Nishmosom Ephraim Shmuel Ben Avraham HaKohen Chai Tova Bas Eliezer Mendel HaKohen on the book of Yechezkel. We're in chapter 12. Chapter 12, verse 4. And at the moment, in chapter 12, it appears that the warnings of impending doom to Yerushalayim have been ignored. Been ignored by the people of Yerushalayim, been ignored by the people of Babylonia. And now Yechezkel's been tasked with by God to give a public demonstration of what exile looks like. And he's been told to gather up implements of exile, which we discussed last week. Just, you know, what people do when you're your house is invaded and you've got to leave and you're evicted by enemies. Just a knapsack with just emergency rations and a pillow and a blanket. And he's giving a demonstration of what exile looks like. And in verse 4, God tells him exactly what he should do. This is again, Yechezkel chapter 12, verse 4. V'hotzeitzel kelecho kichlei golo. You shall bring out your implements, implements of exile, yomom leinehem, day by day. Like do this demonstration regularly, day after day, leinehem, in front of their eyes. Then he adds something new, but atot teitzi b'erev leinehem, and then you should do it again in the evening, leinehem, in front of their eyes, kamotsoi gola. Like those who are departing for exile. And the idea here is that he's demonstrating what exile looks like. That the enemies, the Babylonians, are going to arrive in Yerushalayim. They're going to break through the walls. They're going to take everybody out. Those that aren't slaughtered, those that aren't dead already from famine, from plague, etc., they're going to be sent into exile. They'll just have to pick up a few basic items that they will need, and they're going to be dragged off into exile. So in the previous verse, in the previous verses, Yechezkel is told three things. Number one, he's told to make these implements of exile. Again, the most basic items you can imagine that you would carry off with you into exile. I showed you a picture last week, if you remember, of what it looked like in 1940 when Jews were gathered and schlepped from their homes by the Nazis and trained off, sent off by train, not only to exile, but for destruction, to be murdered. So he's told to gather, make implements of exile. Then he's told previously, "Vegalei yomam leinehem," for a few days, leave your home with these items in front of everyone, so that everyone can see what it's like to go into exile with just the shirt on your back and very basic implements with you. And the third thing he was told, don't just do this in your hometown. Yechezkel lived in a village in Babylonia. Don't just do this in this demonstration in your own hometown, but travel around the Jewish communities in Babylonia, of which there were many. Remember, we're talking, there's going to be nearly 2 million Jews in the Babylonian exile. At the moment, there's probably less than a million, but they are mainly in border areas, border towns, villages. And he's told to travel around these towns in Babylonia where Jews live. The most famous of all, as we know, is a place called Tel Aviv. It's the biggest of the Jewish communities in Babylonia, hence the name of the town that we have, Tel Aviv. Tel Aviv means Tel is a ruin. Aviv means a springtime. And they called it Tel Aviv because they recognized that the land of Israel was a tel at the moment. At this particular time in history, it was a ruin. But they hoped that it would, in the future, it would be Aviv. It would be springtime. It would be the time for return to the land of Israel, hence the name Tel Aviv. So he's told to go to all these places in Babylonia and make this demonstration to the people. But here, in verse 4, God tells Yechezkel about another important part of this demonstration of exile. He tells him to take These implements of exile, not only during the daytime, but va'atol tetzei bo'erev, do it at night as well. In other words, there's going to be a matinee performance and an evening performance. And it's easy to understand why Yechezkel is commanded to act out this play, this portrayal, this demonstration during the day in various locations. Because during the day, people are in the street and can observe the display in clear sunlight. But why is Yechezkel commanded to have an evening performance at night as well? Very interesting question here. After all, in the times of the Tanakh, people weren't out on the streets at night. They didn't have any street lights, and people weren't out at night. People were at home at night. As soon as it got dark, people were at home. It's the source of the halacha that Rashi brings at the beginning of the Gemara in Brochus, which is one of the heterim we have to daven Mariv before it gets dark. You know, we have Mariv, and we don't always, certainly in the summer, we have Mariv before it gets dark. And one of the reasons is because of the time of the Tanakh. So, you know, when it got dark very late, people didn't want to go out at night, go out into the darkness, so they daven Mariv earlier on. But nevertheless, he's told here to perform this demonstration of going out into exile both at during the day and at night. And why at night? So in order to answer that question and understand the meaning of the next few verses, we have to take a step back here and review the contemporary Jewish history as it was playing out in Yehuda, in the land of Israel, in Yehuda, in the southern kingdom of Yehuda, and in Yerushalayim at this particular time. This is a reminder of things we've discussed, not in detail, but in general terms in previous shiurim. But now we need to know exactly what the current political situation was in Yerushalayim. So we're at a point here where the first wave of exiles into Babylonia had taken place 6 years earlier. Yechezkel, the prophet Yechezkel, was one of those that went into exile 6 years earlier. But it's still 5 years until the Beis HaMikdash is going to be destroyed. We're talking in the year about 428 BCE. And at this particular time, at the time of this prophecy that Yechezkel is receiving in Babylonia, in Yerushalayim, there was still a king. And the king in Yerushalayim was King Tzidkiyahu, who was the 20th and final king of Yehuda. Direct descendant of King David, and he's the last king of Yehuda before the conquest of the land of Israel by Nebuchadnezzar of Babylonia. His name, his real name wasn't Tzidkiyahu, his real name was Matanyahu, Matanyahu, which means gift of God. Now, after the original siege of Yerushalayim, about 6 years earlier, in the year 434 BCE, Nebuchadnezzar deposed the then king of Yehuda, who was called Yechaniah or Yechoniah. He took him into exile, along with all the great leaders of Yehuda, including Yechezkel, the prophet, many others as well, Daniel, Mordechai, all the great leaders of Yehuda, together with all the professionals, the accountants, but all the architects, the artisans, all the professionals, and of course, as we said, Yechezkel was one of them, and he's now prophesying now in that exile in the year 428 BCE, 5 years before the destruction, which will take place in the year 423 BCE. Now, Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylonia, having deposed and exiled the previous king of Yehuda, King Yechoniah, installed Netanyahu, this guy, who's, we know him as King Tzidkiyahu, but Nebuchadnezzar installed Matanyahu, who was his uncle, as the new king of Yehuda, and he changed his name, interestingly enough. The Babylonian king changed this guy's name from Matanyahu to Tzidkiyahu. We know that from the book of Malachim. And the prophet Yirmiyahu was Tzidkiyahu's advisor. But unfortunately for the Jews of Jerusalem and the Jews of Yehuda, Tzidkiyahu was no good. He was rotten to the core, and he paid no attention to the prophet Yirmiyahu, to Jeremiah. And Tzidkiyahu's reign ended ignominiously with the siege and fall of Yerushalayim in the year 422 or 423 BCE. Now, this King Tzidkiyahu was 21 years old when he was made king of Yehuda by Nebuchadnezzar. He was a young man. And the king at that time was already a vassal state, a satellite state of the Babylonian Empire under King Nebuchadnezzar. And despite the strong objections to the prophets of Yirmiyah and Baruch ben Neriah was the teacher of Yirmiyahu and other family and advisors, and ignoring the example of his older brother Jehoiakim, who was also one of the kings of Yehuda, Tzidkiyahu foolishly entered into an alliance with Pharaoh Khufra of Egypt. He was concerned that Nebuchadnezzar would eventually come into Yerushalayim and take control and get rid of him. The country itself was under the control of the Babylonians, but the Babylonians had made no attempt to institute Babylonian law in Yerushalayim. Tzidkiyahu feared that that would happen. So he made an alliance with the king of Egypt, Khufra, and when Nebuchadnezzar found out about it, he responded by invading Yehuda, and he also invaded Egypt, and Nebuchadnezzar began a siege of Yerushalayim in December of the year 426 BCE. The imagery during the siege was almost too terrible to describe. We discussed this in the first few chapters of Yechezkel, and Yirmiyahu describes it like this in Eicha, right? Which, you know, we really didn't want to go back to Eicha because we read it last week, and Eicha's a book we don't want to read more than once a year, but to understand what's going on in Yerushalayim during the siege of the Babylonians, and to understand the parallels that existed between the siege of Yerushalayim under the Babylonians and the siege of Yerushalayim under the Romans and what happened in the Holocaust. These are three events in Jewish history that got very, very strong parallels. There was plague, lack of food, famine, plague, cannibalism. People were dying in the streets. People were taking the bodies home and consuming them. People were being, eventually, when the Babylonians broke through, the people of Yerushalayim were massacred. Those that weren't massacred were put in chains and sent into exile. And unfortunately, we got this description of what living in Yerushalayim was like under the siege of the Babylonians in the years 426, 425, and 424, like a three-year siege of Yerushalayim. And Yirmiyahu in the book of Eicha describes it like this. I'm only going to give you two psukim because, as I said, we had Eicha last week. Anyone reading the English of Eicha would have, you know, put the book down immediately and not wanted to read further. But he writes like this: Dovok Lashon Yonek Alchiko Batsoma. The tongues of the babies were cleaving to their palates from thirst. Ol Olim Sholu Lecha. The young children were begging for bread. Poreis Ein Lohem. That they searched and no one could find any bread for them. Ha'ochlim l'ma'adanim noshamu b'chutzos. Those who were used to eat, the rich, who were used to eating, you know, delicacies, are perishing in the street, dying of famine and plague in the street. Ha'emunim alei tola. Those reared in crimson, chibku ashpasos, were rummaging through the dustbins. So it's a scene of complete and utter fall from grace. Yerushalayim was the worst place in the world to be. And of course, yeah. No, That was a different siege. That was the siege of Jerusalem by the Romans. Yeah. Nothing to do with this. There was no food in Jerusalem. They'd run out of food. It got so bad, if you remember in previous chapters, Yechezkel described that they there was no fuel. There was no fuel to cook the food. So they were using their own dung as fuel to cook food. Now, I'm not going to go into all the horror stories that Yirmiyahu describes. But just to give you a paint a picture of what Yerushalayim was like. This is the background to this verse. We have to know what was going on in Yerushalayim and why Yechezkel is instructed to give this demonstration of going out into exile, being dragged out into exile at night. We'll see the reason why in a second when we continue to discuss the life of Tzidkiyahu. So after laying siege to the city for about 30 months, which was not a constant siege, there were breaks in the siege. When Nebuchadnezzar sent his army out to engage the Egyptians in the south, which he wiped out the Egyptian army, Nebuchadnezzar finally succeeded in capturing Jerusalem in the year 423 BCE, and King Tzidkiyahu and his followers attempted to escape at night. They made their way out of the city surreptitiously through gaps in the walls of the city, which they dug holes and passages through the walls of the city of Jerusalem, and they managed to escape, but were captured on the plains leading to Jericho, to Jericho, and taken to a place called Rivlah. Rivlah is on the border of the land of Israel, and what's today's Transjordan, or Jordan, and was the border going into the Babylonian Empire. Remember, Yehuda, the land of Israel, was a vassal state. It still had a border. It still was a recognized country. It was just under the control of the Babylonians. Rivlah marked the border of leaving the land of Israel and entering the royal, so to speak, the kingdom of Babylonia. And that's where they were taken to. King Tzidkiyahu and all his men were captured by the Babylonians and taken to Rivlah, where the King Nebuchadnezzar was stationed. Just as a side issue, Nebuchadnezzar himself never entered Jerusalem to destroy it. Nebuchadnezzar was very concerned that if he entered Jerusalem, something bad would happen to him. And that was the reason for that was because Daniel, who was one of his advisors, told him that he shouldn't enter Jerusalem. But nevertheless, he instructed his chief of staff. His chief of staff was a guy called Nebuzaradan. Nebuzaradan entered Jerusalem and he killed 947,000 people. 947,000 people. Almost a third of the Jewish population of the world at that time. And now Tzidkiyahu, the king, the final king of Yehuda, has escaped. He's escaped across the plains of Jericho where he was captured. And then he was taken to this place, Rivlah, and he was brought in front of King Nebuchadnezzar. Tzidkiyahu had Nebuchadnezzar then executed all of Tzidkiyahu's children in front of his eyes and killed them slowly. And then Nebuchadnezzar had his eyes gouged out and he was loaded with chains and carried off to Babylonia, which is a theme that we'll discuss later in verse 13 of this chapter. And Tzidkiyahu, this king, the last king of Yehuda, remained a prisoner in Babylonia until he died. Blinded, his whole family wiped out in front of his eyes, and all of it predicted by Yirmiyahu. Yirmiyahu told him, the prophet Jeremiah told him what would happen to him. He paid no attention, and this was what happened to him. Now, I mentioned in that brief history lesson, very brief history lesson, that King Tzidkiyahu and his followers attempted to escape Jerusalem at night. As soon as the Babylonians broke through the walls of Jerusalem, which was on the 9th of Tammuz. Now, we have a fast on the 17th of Tammuz. And the Gemara says that is the date that the Babylonians broke through into Jerusalem. But it's actually not right. The Babylonians broke into Jerusalem on the 9th of broke through the walls of Yerushalayim on the 9th of Tammuz. It was on the 17th of Tammuz that the Romans broke through the walls of Yerushalayim. So the Babylonians actually broke through into the city on the 9th of Tammuz, and they destroyed it exactly, destroyed Yerushalayim, set it on fire exactly 1 month later on the 9th of Av. So on that night, the night that they broke through, we discussed that King Sidkiyahu and his entourage attempted to escape Yerushalayim, making their way out of the city, but were captured. And as we just discussed, all his children were murdered in front of his eyes, and he was blinded by Nebuchadnezzar. Now, whilst most of the Jews of Yehuda who survived the onslaught of Nebuzaradan went into exile, and went into exile in chains in broad daylight, which is the point Yechezkel's demonstration is supposed to portray to the Jews in Babylonia, in the first part of this verse and in the previous verses. Our verse also says, V'hotzeitze kolecho kichli gola yomom la'inehem, a demonstration of what it means to go into exile in broad daylight. That is what the fate of the majority of the Jews of Yehuda and Yerushalayim was. They were carried off in broad daylight. But the second part of the verse, Va'ato teitze be'erev le'inehem, a demonstration of what it means when you go into exile at night, this is not referring to the regular Jews. This is referring a direct reference to what will happen to the king, to King Sidkiyahu, as the Malbim points out here, and how he explains this verse and the ensuing verses. And these are the words of the Malbim here. V'zehi moshlad Sidkiyahu. When Yechezkel is told to do this, to make this demonstration of what's going to happen when the Babylonians come into Yerushalayim and drag everyone off into exile, the second part of this verse is talking about King Sidkiyahu. Sherotzel livroach balayla, he attempted to flee Jerusalem at night. Ad shebe'esh shenikva ha'ir, at the time that the walls of the city were breached, and the people there inside Yerushalayim realized if they were lucky to survive, they would be going into exile into Babylonia. Rotzahu Lotseis Balaila, the king attempted to escape at night, Behechove Latsad Acher, and by hiding surreptitiously, knowing exactly how to get out of the city. They had tunnels, they had holes in the walls, secret passages, and the intention, says the Malbim, I'll just carry on with the Malbim without giving you the Hebrew, the intention and the description of King Sidkiyahu's attempted escape continues in the next verse. But before that, says the Malbim, there's something to say about the nature of Yechezkel's prophecies about King Sidkiyahu and about the Babylonians themselves. What's fascinating about the book of Yechezkel and its multiple chapters that deal with the destruction of Yerushalayim and also the exile into Babylonia, King Sidkiyahu is never mentioned by name in the whole book. You think to yourself that Yechezkel is the prophet of the Jewish people, the senior prophet of the Jewish people, operating out of Babylonia, giving us insights and prophecies about what would happen to Yerushalayim, and paralleling what happened in Yerushalayim to future events, what would happen in the Roman occupation and the Roman destruction, and what would happen later on in Jewish history, through various exiles and various dispersions and various oppressions and persecutions. You'd think that Yechezkel would make great play about mentioning the fate of King Sidkiyahu. But the reality is, he doesn't mention him by name in the whole book, even though he was the king of Israel. Furthermore, as is pointed out by the Malbim and others here, the kingdom of Babylonia itself is also only mentioned indirectly. There is no prophecy in the whole book of Yechezkel that deals with the future of Babylonia and its eventual destruction. Remember that the Babylonian Empire will not last very long. It's we're talking about the year that the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed is 423 BCE. 48 years later, was it 48 years later? Hold on, 27 and 23. 50 years later, just over 50 years later, 51 years later, in the year 370, 371, the Babylonian Empire will be destroyed. The Babylonian Empire will come to an end. The third king of Babylon, Belshazzar, will be assassinated at night at his party. The writing on the wall story with Daniel, and that will signal the end of the Babylonian Empire and the rise of the Persian Median Empire, which would eventually lead to the story of Purim. But Yechezkel, who's living through the Babylonian exile, never mentions the Babylonians by name. He only mentions them offhand. He never mentions the Babylonians by name, and he never mentions the fall of the Babylonian Empire. despite the fact that when we come to chapters 25 to 32 here, Yechezkel's going to have a lot to say about the fall of all the other empires that will oppress the Jews throughout history. So the reason it could be, I'm not giving you the definitive answer because I don't know the definitive answer, why Yechezkel never mentions King Zedekiah by name. He just calls him the Nasi. He just calls him the Prince of Israel without mentioning his name. And the reason why Yechezkel never mentions the Babylonians or the fall of the Babylonians. It could be that there's no prophecy about Babylonia in Sefer Yechezkel is related, it appears, to the indirect manner in which Yechezkel mentions Zedekiah, the king. Like, he also doesn't mention him by name. Yechezkel doesn't mention Zedekiah by name. He doesn't mention Babylonia by name. And I think there are two ways of interpreting the connection between the two ideas. Why Yechezkel doesn't mention Zedekiah, why Yechezkel doesn't mention Babylonia. One is that Babylonia, in the generation of destruction, functions as God's emissary. The Babylonian Empire are there to punish the Jewish people. And so, while it fulfills this function, there are no damaging prophecies made about its future. Because at the moment, it's doing exactly, the Babylonian Empire are performing exactly what they're supposed to be doing. They're here to punish the Jewish people. As is indicated by the first prophecy that Yechezkel has, which is in the first chapter, Ruach Sa'ara Bo Min HaTzofon, an enormous storm is coming from the north. The north is always indicative of the Babylonians. So while they're doing God's work, so to speak, there's no mention of them by Yechezkel, certainly no derogatory mention of them by Yechezkel, because he understands they're acting in, so to speak, they're acting under God's direction, and therefore he's got no business discussing them unless God tells him to do so. The other way of understanding it is that because Yechezkel was a more pragmatic approach, because Yechezkel lives in Babylonia, he actually lives there, he's in exile himself, he's unable to denounce the empire in which he dwells, for fear of being, we know what happens, and he doesn't even need to be a despotic regime or a totally despotic regime. If you live in North Korea and you openly criticize in public the regime, so you disappear. So it could be that Yechezkel was concerned about that. And because of the prevailing circumstances of a despotic reign, he felt uneasy about denouncing the Babylonian Empire while he lived in Babylonia. And this could also explain the obscure description of Zedekiah. Again, Zedekiah, as his name's never mentioned. He's just described, as we'll see later in the chapter, he's just described as the Prince of Israel. with no explicit mention made of his name. It could be the reason why Yechezkel doesn't mention him is because the rulers of Babylonia thought that the coronation of Sidkiyahu in Yerushalayim, originally he was anointed king on the orders of Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylonia, and they thought that would have the effect of creating an artificial quiet. The Jews will be quiet now. I've given them a Jewish king from their royal line, and they'll toe the line, and they'll behave themselves. But of course, that never happens with the Jewish people. The Romans have yet to find that out. The Greeks have yet to find that out. And the Jewish people just do not lay down and submit to rule. But they thought that if they give the Jewish people a vassal leader, a puppet king from the royal house, that would lead to peace in Jerusalem, without the possibility of a rebellion. And that's what they thought. But again, this hope proved to be in vain. Because as we mentioned when we were discussing the life of Tzidkiyahu, he actually entered into an alliance with Pharaoh, with the Pharaoh of Egypt, Pharaoh Khofra, and then he revolted against Babylonia, which was the catalyst for the original siege of Yerushalayim and its eventual destruction. Consequently, Yechezkel demurred from paying explicit attention to Tzidkiyahu, even omitting his name, didn't even mention his name, in order not to arouse the ire of Babylon and the Babylonian government. Because after all, as we described what happened to Tzidkiyahu, his children were murdered in front of his eyes and he was blinded and put in prison for the rest of his life. Tzidkiyahu was a persona non grata as far as the Babylonians were concerned. And just to add a footnote to history, and a footnote to a warning from history, there's never been an occasion, ever, in Jewish history, when the Jewish people have been in control, autonomous control, of the land of Israel, where they've made an alliance with an outside force, even a force like the Egyptians, who had a huge army, a self-defense pact with them. There's never been an occasion in Jewish history where the Jewish people have made an alliance with another nation, and when the Jewish people got into trouble, that nation helped them out. On every single occasion where the Jewish people, when Israel as a kingdom, the northern kingdom, the southern kingdom, the combined kingdom, whenever they made alliances with governments they thought would protect them, or allies, military allies, it never worked out, ever. Not once. There isn't one occasion where any of our allies came to our defense at a time when we were under military attack. So that's the background to why Yechezkel is being commanded to demonstrate the meaning of going into exile, to give a demonstration of what it means to go into exile, both during the day and during the night. During the day is to demonstrate to the people what the people of Yerushalayim are going to be going through, and at night to demonstrate how the King Tzidkiyahu, is going to try and escape Yerushalayim, but the eventuality is that even King Tzidkiyahu will not be able to escape. He'll be captured by the Babylonians and end his life in blinded, without his family, his murdered family, and in prison. So that is the reason here in verse 4 why Yechezkel is told to do this demonstration of exile in both during the day and during the night, and he's told to do it at various locations around Babylonia and all the places where there were Jewish communities, and the idea being that the leaders of the Babylonian Jewish community, who were very, very influential, we're talking about the great leaders of Yerushalayim, mainly. Some of them were prophets, Zechariah, Haggai, Malachi, Ezra, Baruch ben Neria. All these people could see what was going on, could see what Yechezkel was trying to demonstrate, and the idea being that they would send messages back to Yerushalayim to try and convince the people of Yerushalayim to do some type of teshuvah before it was too late. It was already too late to prevent Yerushalayim from being destroyed. It wasn't too late from preventing some type of mitigation to all the disaster that was going to come. The disaster itself, the tragedy of Yerushalayim, is that a lot of the slaughter could have been prevented by teshuva. The reality is the people weren't interested in doing teshuva. And as we'll see, this chapter, unfortunately, this chapter of Yechezkel, as it proceeds and as the story unfolds, is a horrible, horrible parallel to the events of the 20th century and a horrible, horrible parallel to the events that are taking place now in the land of Israel, as we'll see. But before we come to that, we need to read verse 5. And this is an extension of the demonstration that Yechezkel has to make. And again, it concerns the king. It's a demonstration about what the king is going to do, what the king in Yerushalayim is going to do, King Tzidkiyahu. So God commands him in verse 5, chapter 12, verse 5. He tells him again, God tells Yechezkel, le'einehem chasar l'cho bakir. Before their eyes, dig yourself a hole in the wall, v'hotseitzabo, and leave through it. In other words, you know, when you're giving this demonstration, if you're doing it from your own house, dig a hole in your wall and show how you can escape through the wall. And if you're in another city, so do the same in another city. And again, this is to replicate the second part of King Tzidkiyahu's nighttime escape plan, which is described again. It's described by Yirmiyahu, by the prophet Yirmiyahu. Yirmiyahu describes what King Tzidkiyahu did. He says, "Vatiboka ha'ir," when the city was breached. He's talking about Yerushalayim. When the city was breached, "V'chol anshei ha'milchama yivruchu," and the king and all his bodyguards fled. "Vayetzu me'ha'ir laila," they let him emerge from the city at night. "Derech shar bein hachomosayim," by way of the gates between two walls. In other words, they dug. They had secret passages that led them out of the city between walls. "Asher al gan hamelech," what was near the king's garden. "V'kastim al ha'ir soviv," and the Babylonians were surrounding the city. "V'yelchu derech ha'arova," and they went by the way of the Arova. They went south. They managed to escape Yerushalayim and head south. So Yechezkel is told to replicate what Tzidkiyahu is going to do in 5 years' time, as a warning. A warning that it's not going to work. And then God says to him, furthermore, "La'eneha," again, before their eyes, verse 6, "Al-Koseif Tisov Bo'alto Totsi," on your shoulders you shall carry the implements of exile, your knapsacks. The Jews will carry their knapsacks with their cup and their spoon and their jug and their blanket, the very basics that they're going to be allowed to leave with. "La'inehem al kosei tiso ba'alota totsi, ponecho techase," cover your face. "Velo tira es ha'oretz," and do not see the ground. "Ki mofes nesaticho leveish Yisrael," for I've made you a sign for the house of Israel. And what's the meaning of this last part, the final part of Yechezkel's demonstration? Says the Malbim, Omar, God tells Yechezkel, "Le'einehem," again, "Le'einehem," in front of their eyes, "Al kosei tiso balota yiso kol kelev al kaspo kiderech habarech." God told Yechezkel, after he had dug a hole in his wall and emerged into the night, imitating the escape of King Tzidkiyahu, that he was to carry these implements of exile on his shoulders, v'shiyotzim balota, and escape in darkness, shekolze simonim al abricha, This is all a reference to the attempt by King Tzidkio to escape Yerushalayim, which again is going to be unsuccessful. Od Sivo Inyan Acher. And finally, Yechezkel is given one last instruction. Ponecho techase. Hide your face. Velotira es ha'oretz. Hide your face, like, you know, when people come in, sometimes when people are brought into court, and they're brought in a car, and all the reporters are outside the court, and they don't want their face to be seen, so they take them out of the car, and they put like a blanket over their heads, so that people can't take photos of them. And so he says, ponecho techase. Below Tira Esa'oretz. When you come out into the street in front of all the people that are watching this demonstration of what exile looks like, cover your face so you can't see where you are going. Sha'acha Shiyasa Asimonim Ha'acharonim. Meaning that after Yechezkel has imitated the escape plan of King Tzidkiyahu, Hamorim Al Bricha Tzidkiyahu Yechasa Ponav Lios La'oshia Chusa. Meaning that Yechezkel is imitating the escape plan of King Tzidkiyahu, covering his face, indicating that when King Tzidkiyahu would leave Yerushalayim, he would end up fleeing in a random direction. He wouldn't know where he was going. He would just run anywhere. He was so freaked out by the fact that he had to run, so they just ran anywhere. There was no rhyme or reason to the direction they took. And they ran straight into the hands of the great, grateful enemy, the Babylonians, who, as we said, did what they wanted to do with them. They executed his children and blinded him. Ki mofes nasaticho leves Yisrael. And the verse and this demonstration concludes with the saying, Ki mofes nasaticho leves Yisrael. This whole play, this whole demonstration, this whole portrayal was designed to demonstrate to the Jews of Babylonia, the Jews of Yehuda, the Jews of Yerushalayim, what would become of them, that they're going to be taken away into exile by day with their meager possessions, and also what would become of their king, someone who thought he could escape God sneakily in darkness, but he would eventually be caught by the Babylonians and plunged into permanent darkness by having his eyes gouged out while fleeing aimlessly right into the trap that God had set for him. Dark stuff. So, this is what Yechezkel was commanded to do. This was his tafkid, this was his job. And he knew what he was doing, Yechezkel. And instead, what's interesting, Yechezkel doesn't make any attempt to say to God, you know, do you mind if I daven first and pray that, you know, we can avoid this type of thing? Yechezkel is, because of chapter 11, which we discussed in great detail over a period of maybe 2 months, because of chapter 11, which outlined exactly what was going to happen, the destruction, the burning down of Yerushalayim, Yechezkel's already aware that what's coming next can't be set aside, and Yerushalayim is going to be destroyed. The only thing that can be changed in God's plan is the extent of the misery, the extent of the slaughter, the extent of the exile. So Yechezkel, at this stage, does not plead with God. We'll see later that he does, but at this stage he's not pleading with God. Instead, he does exactly what he's told, which is verse 7. We come to verse 7. It says, Bo'as kein, says Yechezkel. And I did so. Kasher tuvesi, exactly as God commanded to me. Kli hotseitzi kichli gola yomom. I brought out the implements, my implements of exile, during the day, and I did it yomom, I did it from day to day. I repeated this demonstration, not only in my town, but in all the Jewish areas of Babylonia. Uvo erev, and at night, chosarti li bakir, I did as God told me at night. I dug a hole in the wall by yad, with my hand. Bo'alto ad seitzi, and in the darkness, the gloom, I left. al kosef nososi leinehem, and I carried out my meager possessions on my shoulder, as God told me, le'einehem, in front of their eyes. So, God, Yechezkel, does exactly what God told him to do. The only point of real interest here is the way that Yechezkel dug through the wall at night. Remember, in verse 5, back to verse 5, which we did today, God told Yechezkel, le'einehem chasa l'cho bakir. Before their eyes, dig for yourself a hole in the wall, which was to imitate what exactly King Tzidkiyahu was going to do. To imitate exactly what King Tzidkiyahu was going to do. What's interesting is that in verse 5, God didn't tell Yechezkel how to dig through the wall. It seems that God gave Yechezkel some latitude as how to dig. But he says here that Uba'erev chosarti li bakir bayad. I dug myself a hole in the wall by hand. It seems that Yechezkel dug a hole through the wall in the house by hand rather than using a cutting tool. Why would he do that? I mean, if he's giving a demonstration, obviously the king wasn't going to do that. The king had obviously, King Tzidkiyahu had obviously prepared his escape route. And it's not the nature of a king to dig through a wall with his fingers. So why is Yechezkel doing that? So the Radak here comments here, he rationalizes the reason that Yechezkel chose to dig with his hands. Says the Radak, Rav David Kimchi, again, Rav David Kimchi, we're talking someone's writing 1,000 years ago, he writes as follows, Bayad, he says, Lo bikli barazel shechosrim bo. He didn't use an iron implement to cut through the wall as would be usual. Kadesh lo yishmu kolo, ukamo ka'ein ka'odom hayotse pison bechipozo. And the reason he tunneled out with his hands was in order that he could work silently in the manner of a person who's forced to suddenly leave in a hurry and doesn't want anyone to hear what he's doing. And she'ein lo panai lokachas kelov, indicating that there was no time to get tools and dig with them. In other words, he's telling them that when the Babylonians are coming into Yerushalayim, their arrival is going to come so swiftly that there's going to be no time to do anything. Unless you've got a tunnel dug already, it's going to be too late. They're going to come with incredible force. They're going to come with incredible violence. And they're going to come with incredible speed. Kain Tzidkiyahu v'sorov, k'shiro sorim moloch bovel, birchol miyad v'yotze b'chipozo. And he says, so it was with King Tzidkiyahu and his men, when they saw the army of the king of Babylonia approaching, they saw them breaking through the walls of Yerushalayim, they had to flee immediately without making any noise or attracting attention. But afal pi she'enu kosov shom b'chisru b'kir, kibben she'oma hine b'kir yachteru, emes kein hoya. And even though we don't find in the text of the story of King Tzidkiyahu, in the story which we'll discuss later, the details of what was on King Tzidkiyahu's mind. We don't see that he and his men silently dug through the walls with their hands because there had been no time to do so. Nevertheless, you would have to say that originally, like when it was clear, like a day or 2 days before the Babylonians broke through, when it was obvious, it was only a matter of time that the Babylonians were going to get through into the city, that they were so desperate that that's exactly what they did. The last attempts, the final breakthrough to get themselves out of the city, they would have had to have done dug with their own hands because they're in such a hurry to escape. And says the Yeradak, so here you have a self-fulfilling prophecy, very unusual in the prophets, because Yechezkel did it. That's how it ended up that Tzidkiyahu did it. It's called a self-fulfilling prophecy, and it's based on a Gemara in Makkos. The Gemara in Makkos on Daf Yud Aleph is very clear on Daf Yud and Yud Aleph. It's very clear Tzaddik gozer v'HaKadosh Baruch Hu mekayem. When a tzaddik or a novi does something, afal pisha al tanai, even though it's, there's conditions attached to it, nevertheless, it will come true. So the very fact that Yechezkel chose to dig with his fingers meant, says the Radak, that eventually the final hole, the final breakthrough to get themselves outside the city by the king and his men, they did it by hand as well. V'chein nira miderech hasvara, and also appears logical to assume, kihem yotzu derech gan hamelach, that the king and his men fled through the gardens, shenichnasu derech pesach hagan v'chisru bakir hagan, that the last place that they had to exit to get out of Yerushalayim were the fences that surrounded the king's garden. And connecta l'tzeisbo v'yad chisrubo, and the best way of doing that in silence was to do that with your hands. Well, you're not talking about stone wall there, you're talking about a garden fence. The best way to do that in silence is to do it with your hands. Kilo hoyu lahem kli baraz alachdobo, because they were escaping. They could only take what small provisions they needed, and the last thing they wanted to take with them was any weapons, which, if they came across the Babylonians, they didn't want to give the impression that they wanted to fight, because they were been outnumbered thousands to one and had been massacred, so they took no weaponry with them. So the only thing that they could have done to knock down the garden walls, the garden fences, as they broke out of Yerushalayim, was their hands. They were in such a rush, they must have clawed through the garden fence by hand and escaped. So that is basically Yechezkel's, what he's commanded to do and what he did as a demonstration. Just a footnote here before we proceed, and we'll come to a question that we'll deal with, please God, next week. I just want to make a footnote here, and then next week, please God, I'm going to deal with the parallel between the exile, the way the Jews went into exile here in Babylonia, the way the Jews went into exile time of the Romans, the way the Jews went into exile various other times in history, but most notably not only to exile, but to mass extermination at the hands of the Germans. These are all very similar events. And the parallel to what we've just been describing to the current situation in the state of Israel, as it stands at the moment, 75 years on. But before that, and I'll finish today on this issue, just a footnote. It's not by chance that after the theme of this chapter is clearly spelled out by God in verse 1, that there is an underlying message in the verses we just explained, and the rest of the chapter. God begins by telling Yechezkel at the beginning of this chapter, Einayim lohem liros v'lo ro'u. These Jews have got eyes and they don't see. Oznayim lohem lishmoa v'lo shomeu. They've got ears and they do not listen. He base merihem, because they are a house of rebellion. They're a rebellious house. And it's no coincidence that after this criticism, which is the first verse, which is what this chapter is all about. This chapter is all about Jewish people not observing the world around them, not learning from history, and not listening to God. So that's what this is what chapter 12 is. This is what happens when a naim lohem liros v'lo ro'u. You've got eyes and you don't see. Oz naim lohem lishmoa v'lo shomeu. And you've got ears to listen and pay attention and you don't. That turns the Jewish people into a base Mary. That turns the Jewish people into a rebellious house. And it's no coincidence that after this criticism, when God commands Yechezkel to act out this demonstration of basically what exile looks like to the Jewish exiles across Babylonia, that the word le'enehem, if you look in this chapter, the word le'enehem, perform this demonstration before their eyes. It occurs 7 times between verses 3 and 7. bear in mind that this demonstration, this performance, this portrayal is not just for the benefit of the Jews already in the Babylonian exile. But even more importantly, it's designed so that the Jews in Babylonia would send word to the Jews in Yehuda and Yerushalayim that this is what exile looks like. We've seen it. We've seen it with our eyes. We've seen it from the prophet. Pay attention. The constant repetition of the word Le'enehem means that both the Jews in Babylonia and the Jews in Yehuda, back in Israel, in Yerushalayim, have not been using their eyesight properly. Now, you can look at this in two ways, as we will do next week when I explore this issue. It's painful. The prophecies of Yechezkel tear up, as I've mentioned many occasions, tear up your newspapers, tear up the Jerusalem Post, tear up Haaretz, tear up Yedioth Ahronot, tear up the Guardian, tear up the New York Times. If you want to know what's going on in Israel, read this book. These chapters that we're doing now are a parallel to every occasion in Jewish history when we don't see what's in front of our eyes and we don't listen to what God has been telling us for the last 4,000 years. Now, you can look at this in two ways, and we'll deal with them both. God's described the Jews as having eyes and not seeing, having ears and not prepared to listen. That makes them a rebellious house. Now, you can look at this in two ways. Either the Jews, because they are already a rebellious people, are not prepared to look. They're not prepared to look at their surroundings. They're not interested in their surroundings. And they're not prepared to listen. They're not prepared to listen to the voice of the prophets, to what God and the prophets have been telling them for hundreds and thousands of years. That's one way of looking at it. Or you could look at it like this. Because they're not prepared to look, because the Jewish people are never prepared to look in the rearview mirror and look at what has happened to them in the past, they're not prepared to look and see what's coming up behind them. They're not prepared to listen to what God and the prophets have been telling them for thousands of years. That's what makes them a rebellious house. You can look at it either way, or a bit of both, or both. But one thing's for sure. The greatest criticism of the Jewish people throughout history has been that. Einayim lohem v'lo yiru. Oznayim lohem v'lo yishomeu. They've got eyes and they're not prepared to look and see and realize what's going on around them. And they've got ears and they're not prepared to listen to the words of the prophets. And because of these two factors, the Jews of Yehuda and Yerushalayim are going into exile. And as a result of that, Yechezkel is commanded to show them with a display. They can't work it out for themselves. They couldn't see the writing on the wall. And they weren't prepared to listen to the prophets. So the only thing that God's left, got left, so to speak, in his locker is a public display of what it actually looks like. This is what's going to happen to you people. And what it means to go into exile. And his demonstration is going to be Le'enehem. Right in front of their eyes. You can't close your eyes and not look. This is happening. This is not a story. This is not a story the prophet is telling you. This is reality. And the reason why God's command, this is God's last, so to speak, God's last attempt, so to speak, to drill some sense into the heads of the Jewish people. To give them no alternative but to observe what the future holds, what future awaits them, and what it actually looks like. Not just words anymore, not just Musar anymore, not just rebuke anymore, but a public display, and maybe they'll get the message. Maybe they'll do something to mitigate the obvious horrors that are to come in Yehuda and in Yerushalayim. Now we know, we just had Tisha B'Av last week, we know the reality that the Jews paid no attention either, even to this demonstration. And unfortunately, that has been the story of Jewish history, throughout the ages. The Jewish people are notorious. One of the things that we're famous for, or notorious for, or infamous for, is we want to be more goyish than the goyim. I'll say it out loud. You know, we want to be more goyish than the goyim. Right? If you listen to, everyone told me what a wonderful speech the President of Israel gave last week, but he was delighted, absolutely delighted to announce that we have the biggest gay parade in the world, in the holy city of Yerushalayim. Delighted. We look at us, right? A nine lohem velo yero in Yerushalayim. God's pulling his hair out, so to speak. The President of Israel, President of the Jewish state, is delighted, is proud to announce the biggest gay parade in the world is in Yerushalayim. A naim lohem velo yero. Az naim lohem velo yishomeu. We've learned nothing from history. So, next week, before we continue with this chapter, I'm going to go through with you, unfortunately, what it is exactly that the Jews, particularly the Jews of Yehudah and Yerushalayim, but certainly the Jews of almost every generation, what it is that the Jewish people are not prepared to look at, not prepared to see, not prepared to listen to, that God feels, so to speak, compelled to instruct Yechezkel here to make public display of what exile looks like, of what we can expect from God when we not only refuse to see the world around us, when we refuse to listen to the words of the prophets, and what we can expect when we're not even prepared to listen to a display or to watch a display and learn the lessons of an open display of God's displeasure. What we can expect from that. And unfortunately, that's all coming next week. So, I don't know where the other people were today. Normally we have 20 people here. I don't know where everybody is, people on holiday. But thank you everybody for coming. All the Americans were missing today. Thank you everyone for coming. I hope you enjoyed the shiur. We'll reconvene, please God, in health and happiness next Monday. Same time, same place. Calls up to everybody. Thanks for taking part. And I'll see you in health and happiness next. Same time, same place. Calls up. Yeah. Hold on. Before I go, there's a question here. Oh, Barry, thank you. Thank you too. Calls up, everybody.